Volume 4, Chapter 7, The Battle of Bunker Hill. While the Congress was in process of choosing the heads of the Continental Army, a pitched battle was being fought at Boston. The famous Battle of Bunker Hill, later touted as a great American victory, was neither a victory, nor did it take place at Bunker Hill. At the end of May, the Crown had sent a triumvirate of eminent generals to assist, and implicitly to pave the way for superseding General Gage. These prestigious arrivals were General Sir William Howe, an ardent Whig, who as a candidate for Parliament had pledged never to accept a command against the Americans, young General Sir Henry Clinton, and the dashing General John Burgoyne. Ordered by the Crown to proclaim martial law in Massachusetts, General Gage allowed General Burgoyne to write the inflammatory proclamation, which on June 12 denounced the Americans as rebels and traitors, and offered pardon to all laying down their arms, except for the irredeemable Sam Adams and John Hancock. Stunned by the proclamation, the Americans yearned to retaliate, but this yearning grew far stronger when they learned the following day that the British had decided to seize and fortified unoccupied Dorchester Heights, a peninsula south of Boston. The city of Boston was confronted on two sides by peninsulas with heights commanding the town. On the north, Charlestown Peninsula, on the south, Dorchester Heights. Sensing the folly of battling the British directly for the heights, the Massachusetts Committee of Safety on June 15 urged the occupation and fortification of Bunker Hill on Charlestown Peninsula. The American Council of War was split on the issue. The two best generals, Artemus Ward and Joseph Warren, who had been made a general by the Provincial Congress, had long counseled against fortifying Bunker Hill, for the narrow neck of the peninsula endangered the entire force, especially should their scanty ammunition give out. Besides, without artillery, the Americans could not use the position against Boston. However, the widely beloved, though incompetent, General Israel Putnam, seconded by General Seth Pomeroy and Colonel William Prescott, carried the day for rashness over caution. Colonel Prescott was sent out on the night of June 16 to occupy the peninsula with 1,200 of the 10,000 available Americans. Despite the agreed-upon plan, Prescott and Putnam decided to place their main entrenchments on Breed's Hill rather than on Bunker. This was a fateful decision. Bunker Hill was close to Charlestown Neck and guarded the only escape route off the peninsula. Breed's was much further out on the peninsula and in a dangerously exposed position. It was inevitable that when the British saw what had happened, they would attack the fortifications overlooking Boston. Quickly grasping the situation, General Clinton urged a swift and immediate landing behind the American lines at Charlestown Neck, cutting off the Americans from the rear and seizing the entire force with ease. But Gage would not accept such a sneaky and unmilitary tactic. General Howe, he insisted, would mount a frontal assault against the strongest American position. The rebels would panic and run at the sight of the advancing British regulars. Such a display of force would restore the British honor, tarnished at Concord. This typical contempt of the British military for the Americans led them into a disastrous blunder. Even the advantage of speed was scorned as the British made their leisurely way to the tip of the peninsula, allowing the Americans to complete their emplacements. A series of frontal assaults up Breed's Hill allowed the Americans to fight in their best manner, in quasi-guerrilla fashion, employing rifle fire from behind emplacements. The Americans were only partially at an advantage, however, for their precious mobility had been surrendered in favor of fixed positions. In addition, they were in short supply of ammunition and far from an escape route. As a result, repeated frontal assaults by the British finally succeeded. Breed's Hill was overrun, and the Americans were routed out of the peninsula. Losses were enormous on both sides, the Americans suffering over 400 casualties and the British over 1,000, amounting to over 40% of Howe's forces. Indeed, the Battle of Bunker Hill, actually of Breed's Hill, and sensibly known to contemporaries as the Battle of Charlestown, was the bloodiest single conflict on the American continent until 1815. The gravest single loss to the Americans was General Warren, who died in the rout. As for the British, perhaps the most fitting casualty at Bunker Hill was the killing of Major John Pitcairn by a Negro rebel, the same Pitcairn who had been sure that, if he drew his sword but half out of the scabbard, the whole banditti of Massachusetts Bay would flee before him. Now the banditti had cut him down. The American defeat would have been yet far more severe if the advice of General Clinton had not once again been ignored. He urged swiftly seizing advantage of the rout by pressing forward to destroy the demoralized American forces and capture Cambridge. Had General Howe agreed, Clinton might have dealt the revolution a devastating blow, which was precisely what the astute General Ward now feared. But Howe, beginning the rapid development of an unerring talent for making the wrong decision, chose instead to stop, dig in, and fortify Bunker Hill. Thus the victory went to the British in that they had conquered the Charlestown Peninsula, but their preposterous tactics, born of overconfidence, had decimated their army. As in so many military engagements in history, the battle was a tragic comedy of errors on both sides, with Britain's technical victory bought at an enormous price. For their part, contemporary Americans did not have the temerity to claim the battle as a mighty victory, and the entire operation was rightly denounced as rash and unfortunate.